And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk with a real private investigator to find out what he does, how he does it, and why. How to succeed as a private investigator, that's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, let me tell you about Ed Opperman, president of the Opperman Investigations, a private detective agency, also the president of Accurate Information Recovery, which is a computer and cell phone forensics company. He has worked in the investigations field since the early 1980s, first as an information broker, later in counter electronic surveillance. And back several years ago, he teamed up with the founding fathers of what is called the cell phone forensics and digital data recovery. Ed soon made a name for himself, and a big one in this area, has become a leading provider of this type of digital forensic investigation. He's also the host of his very own weekly radio program called The Opperman Report, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Ed, this is fascinating. How are you?
George, it's so nice to meet you, my friend.
This is an interesting field. How in the heck did you get into it?
Oh, boy. Well, I tell you, I got into the PI stuff because originally I was an information broker way back in the early 80s. I had a source in the telephone company in New York City, where I lived in New York City, as you can probably tell from my accent.
Yeah.
I haven't lost yet. And I had a source in the phone company, and all I had to do was give him a phone number, and he could come back. If it was an unlisted phone number, he can come back with a name and an address, and but also it was called local usage. He could give me a list of every a call that was made from that person's phone.
Wow.
Yeah, the long-distance calls and also calls made to another telephone exchange. And also, too, on the report he could give me was the person's work phone number, sometimes their bank account number, and sometimes their Social Security number.
Mm.
Yeah, so this was really, really, this is way back in the 80s. It's way before you had identity theft and problems like that. So this kind of information was really valuable. So I started selling it to other PIs in New York City, and I got to meet some of the biggest guys in the business.
When you are looking for someone, do you do most of your work via computer searching, or do you still physically have to go out there and do what you do?
A little of both. You know, you start off, you do all your database searches and stuff like that, and then you have to make phone calls. You know, a lot of times you'll locate their neighbors and their relatives and stuff like that, or their place of employment, and you'll find them that way.
The world, of course, has gone digital. Everybody's got phones. Everybody's using computers and tablets and things like that. The information, Ed, that's available because of that, is it pretty easy now for just about anybody to find, or do you have to be a specialist like you?
It's pretty easy for anybody to find if you can afford the software. Like the digital forensic softwares are cost a fortune. Just one program could cost $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah, to get you started. And then it's $3,000 every year for the updates and the new licensing. And that's just one. And in my lab, we have like 10 workstations with all different kinds of softwares that you'll put the phones through from one to the next until you get the data you need.
I got a friend of mine in St. Louis. He owns his own small private investigations firm, and most of his clients are in the St. Louis area. And what he does primarily is he goes into restaurants to look for theft. And, you know, to see if the bartender's stealing, and so he's doing it that way. So he's kind of low tech, but he did tell me that he's using a computer and searching and things like that quite a bit now.
Oh yeah. You know, and I tell you, we were using computer investigations way back in the 80s. I can remember back when back in those days, it was legal to get a credit report. And I can remember dialing into the mainframe, you know, TRW and stuff like that to get pull up people's credit reports. So I've been doing computer investigations for a long time.
When some lunatic does something illegal, and the police confiscate his computer, they always seem to get the information they need on the computer. Is that because the guy never erased it, or is it on the computer, you know, forever?
Well, what happens is if you delete something from your computer, it creates available space. And until something new data overwrites that available space, you can recover that deleted data.
Ah.
Yeah.
If you only knew, right?
A lot of them do know, and they try and be slick, and they try and reformat their hard drives and stuff like that. But there's still a lot of information you can pick up, all over the place, even like on the internet. Because a lot of stuff I do is I trace their email address back to their online activity. I invented a search to catch people cheating, where let's say a wife will give me her husband's email address, and I could trace that back to all the online dating websites and gambling sites. So you can come up with a wealth of information with that.
There's software now, because I've noticed this. If you're looking at like one of our clients, Select Comfort, if you're looking at one of their beds, all of a sudden you start going on other sites and these beds pop up all over the place.
Oh yeah, because they drop cookies on your computer.
Now, who's doing that? Is Google doing it, or how does that work?
Well, when you visit a site or you do a search, yeah, Google's part of it. Yeah, they'll drop a cookie on your computer, and then when you go to visit another site, they'll target ads towards you.
That's amazing.
It's scary.
No, it really is. So you wrote a book, How to Succeed as a Private Investigator, which is a step-by-step guide for career investigations. Is it a big career now?
Yeah, a lot of people are interested in this kind of career, and it's a good business to be in. You can make your own schedule. You have a lot of free time. You get to solve puzzles every day. So it's interesting work, and you can carve out a niche for yourself and make a name for yourself and earn a good living.
Now, I know you can't give us names, but what has been one of the most fascinating cases you've been on?
I can give some names.
Oh, you can? Okay.
Yeah, sure. I think that one of my most fascinating cases, definitely. My most fascinating case, I would say, is I was hired by a client in Alaska, a young woman named Shelley Tripp, and she made allegations that she was a prostitute, and she was arrested for prostitution. And her allegation was that Todd Palin, the husband of Sarah Palin, was one of her clients. And we did a whole investigation around that. She gave a story to a National Enquirer. She took 4 polygraph tests. She passed them all. The whole thing. Then we got all of her computer, and it was just such an amazing story. The police department, the police chief in Anchorage, Alaska, came out and did a press release and says, well, we investigated all her allegations into Todd Palin. We could find no truth to it. But then later on, he admitted that Sarah Palin's attorney wrote that press release for him, and he issued it on his letterhead, okay? And this whole thing went on and on and on. I did all the forensics, the computer forensics in that, and the cell phone forensics. I documented all her inventory from her police locker there, from her case. And that actually escalated into a congressional investigation, because what happened was, remember the case where the Secret Service agents went down to Columbia?
I sure do. That's
right. And they stiffed the prostitute down there. They didn't want to pay the bill down there. Well, my client, Shelley Tripp, and by the way, she wrote a book called Boys Will Be Boys by Shelley Tripp. It's up on Amazon.com. She talks about me in the book. But she knew that Secret Service agent. She says, I know that guy. It's the same guy.
All he had to do was pay his little fee.
I know, but he did the same thing to my client, too, in Alaska. He didn't pay her either, but she didn't get the press on that one.
Jeez.
So that was probably my most big, interesting case that I think was a...
How difficult is it for you to get the information you end up getting? I mean, is it a lot of searching, or does it come pretty fast for you?
Every case is different. You know, a lot of times you'll get a phone, a cell phone. A wife thinks her husband's cheating, right? So she'll send me his cell phone, and we have to recover the deleted text messages out of it or the deleted pictures out of it. And sometimes it could be a really quick little operation. You could do it in a few days. But sometimes you have to go back to the cell phone, the software provider who creates these tools, and they have to do custom work on it for you. So it could take. It's like solving a puzzle from beginning to end to get what you need.
Are you saying that if somebody goes to you with somebody else's cell phone number and says, look, I think my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my husband is cheating, here's his number, you can get his text messages? You don't even have to have his phone?
No, you have to have the phone.
Ah.
Okay.
How do you get the phone?
Well, okay, well, all different kinds of cases. Sometimes both spouses are involved, and one party wants to prove their innocence. Another time we had a guy, this is a pretty good one. The guy came back from a bachelor party and, you know, his girlfriend wanted to see the phone, you know, because he had taken pictures during the bachelor party.
Right.
So he takes the phone, he starts smashing it down on the counter.
Guilty.
Yeah, I know. I know. So he smashed it down on the counter to break the screen on it, but we were still able to pull up the pictures. And the guy took pictures of himself and sex acts.
Unbelievable.
Oh, it is unbelievable.
The wonders of being a private investigator. Who generally comes to a private investigator, Ed?
Well, a lot is infidelity. You have the wife wants to check up on her husband. But there's all kinds of, you know, I do criminal defense work too. And with that, we get a lot of TRO violations where someone's accused of sending threatening text messages or threatening emails.
Right.
And we try and prove that they didn't actually send it. Because what you'll have sometimes is the other spouse will park out in front of your house with a laptop, tap into your Wi-Fi, and send themselves a threatening message from your IP address to make it look like you sent it.
Amazing.
Yeah, but there's ways to prove that they used a different computer.
Okay.
So, you know, to get them out of it. But a cursory examination.
But on the face of it, you'd think he did it, right?
Yeah, because it's just like your average cop would just look at this and say, oh, yeah, look at this. Look at the headers. It's the same IP address. It must be come from the guy's house.
Good point. So infidelity is tops on your list. How about missing kids or things like that?
Oh, yeah. I can use my email tracing. What I can do is, like, say a kid runs away from home, right? As long as he's still checking his email account, I can email him and see where he is when he opens it up. And I had one case where we found a kid in 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
20 minutes, yeah. I've had a couple of those missing person cases where we found him right away, too. I had another one where this guy, his girlfriend, it was here in Vegas, and they were visiting town, and they had a fight, and she wandered off. And so they made a missing persons report and all this kind of stuff with the cops. But I talked to this guy, the boyfriend. I talked to him for a couple of minutes, and I got him to admit to me that they had a fight and she took off. And all I had to do was email her. I saw where she was. She was at one of these Hampton Inns hotels.
Did she answer you back?
No, but I knew where she was when she opened it up. There's only a few of those motels in town, so we just checked them all.
Well, no, wait a minute. So you send her just a blanket email.
Yeah.
How do you know where she is when she opens it up?
Because she's opening it up on my server, just like when Google can see the information.
All right.
Right. So I can see where she is when she opens it up. I can see.
Because you've got special software for that.
Yeah. It's just like Google or Hotmail can see. I own the email service.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I can see what they can see because it's my email.
And she didn't even have to reply. She just opened it up.
Just opened it up, and you can see where they are when they open it.
And then there you go.
Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. Now, I understand that in your work, did you meet Mark David Chapman?
Not in my work. I did meet Mark David Chapman, okay? But not in my work. This is way before my work. I met Mark David Chapman when I was in high school.
The killer of John Lennon.
Yes, the guy who killed John Lennon, and it was the same week that he killed, the same weekend that he killed John Lennon. I was just an 18-year-old kid, still in high school, and I was a radical, yippie protester kind of guy, street anarchist activist, political activist on the Lower East Side of New York, and I used to hang out down at Yippie headquarters down there, you know, from Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember
right.
them well.
Yeah, I used to hang out down there, and that's where I ran into Mark David Chapman, right before he killed Lennon. And I have my own conspiracy theories about that whole thing. In fact, I plan on writing another book just about the Lennon assassination.
Really? Something you want to reveal now for us?
Yeah. When we had the anniversary in December, I interviewed a whole bunch of people about the Lennon assassination. Ole Demogard was one. He's a conspiracy theory, an assassination researcher from Denmark. And Mac White, I think you had him on as a guest.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And this other guy, Rod Harrell, who did a video, a documentary called Conspiracy of Silence, the John Lennon Assassination. And he's done some great work, too. Now, my theory is, because when I first, when this first happened, the whole Mark David Chapman thing, I bought all the newspapers in New York City, and I studied up on this as a kid. And it seemed to be there was a party line of the story of Mark David Chapman and the description of Mark David Chapman, that he was kind of a mellow guy that was hanging out in front of the Dakota and getting along well with everyone. But there was one guy, a cab driver, who described a Mark David Chapman that was kind of a frantic guy, kind of hostile, kind of rambling on. And that's the same Mark David Chapman that I met. The one that I met was a very frantic guy. He was very hostile. He was very erratic, you know? And there's no way that I could see that that guy hanging out in front of the Dakota would make any friends because he wasn't a friendly guy.
Right.
Now, there's been reports, too, that James Taylor met the same Mark David Chapman that I met, this frantic guy who confronted him on the subway station up around 72nd Street. But you hardly ever hear about that either. Now, everyone looks at the Mark David Chapman story, and they say, well, this guy's an MK-Ultra, you know, mind-controlled assassin.
Whacked out.
He's like the poster child for a mind-controlled assassin. He looks like it. And I believe that, too. But I believe that there was a double. And there were two of them wandering around New York City that weekend.
And when you say a double,
yeah,
you mean an intentional thing or a coincidental thing, of which I don't believe in coincidences.
Oh, no, definitely. Like a Lee Harvey Oswald. Like there was a
patsy type.
Yeah. Yeah. Like one was an assassin and one was the real guy.
All right. So when you let's say you get hired and you find something heinous about the individual that the person who hired you wants to know, I guess you have to tell them, don't you?
Oh, what do you mean? Like if someone hires me?
You've got to tell your client, right?
Yeah, that's tough, yeah. Yeah, I've had that. That's really tough.
Do they believe you?
Well, you know what? I hate to even get into this story, but I was doing the infidelity search where I traced the email back to online dating websites. And this woman hired me. This is way at the beginning when I first invented the search. And we traced it back to her husband was a trucker, and we traced it back to a gay website. And she just could not believe that her husband could be homosexual and could be involved in any kind of homosexual activity because they had five kids. But I traced it back to the actual ad and a picture of him naked on this homosexual website, and it was tragic. You know, I know it had a really bad effect on her.
Well, she must have suspected something, though, to even call you in the first place, right?
She suspected infidelity, but not homosexuality.
I mean, like this BTK killer out of Wichita who was a serial killer, and his family never knew it. I mean, how can people live with people and not know things like that?
Well, I got to tell you something. With all the investigations I've done, I've seen people's secrets and their secret lives and their secret behavior. And when I walk around, I wonder what people are thinking in their minds and stuff like that. So I'm not that shocked that people who seem normal, perfectly normal, have this whole fantasy world going on in their head. Secret lives.
After you provide the information back to your client,
yeah,
does it always like end in a divorce or something like that?
No. That's a whole nother thing. In these, there's a lot of manipulation that goes on in these relationships. And a lot of times, you know, when they call me up, when the client calls me up, I can talk to them for 10 minutes on the phone, and I can know if there's real infidelity going on or if it's just in their head and they're overly suspicious or something like that. And even they know sometimes, but they have to have a third party come in and snap them into a reality with a report on paper or, to have that extra proof.
Do they confront the individual after you give them the info?
Yeah, almost always. I think there's a confrontation that goes on, yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Might not be right away, but they do bring it up.
Yeah.
Aha, I have this. Picture, do you still do that too? Pictures, all that?
If we can get it, you know, a lot of my stuff is, nationwide. It's even international, you know, it's over the internet. And what we can do too is after I trace the email back to the dating site, because a lot of times the husband will just say, well, listen, I'm on that site because I like to look at the pictures.
Right.
So we can expand on that investigation. And it's like a whole catfish investigation, where what I do is I contact them from several different ads, personal ads and websites.
Oh, you trick them.
Right. And we try and get them to exchange photos.
Hold on, Eddie. We're going to come right back, talk a little bit more about what you do, how to succeed as a private investigator. Welcome back. Ed Opperman with us, how to succeed as a private investigator. Ed, is there a school to be a private investigator, or do you just learn from the school of hard knocks?
There are schools where you can get these diplomas and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because those schools, they're really not useful. They're not going to help you get licensed, and they're not going to help you get jobs done. And there's even a lot of guys, too, who come into the business after being cops and being in the military and stuff like that.
Right.
But they're so used to relying on the police resources that they don't know how to use the old-fashioned techniques that I learned back in the 80s, like how to locate someone's employment or how to get a name and address from a post office box, or just the things that you have to learn from the old days.
You're a trickster. You're pretty good at what you do.
Oh, yeah. A lot of it is just creating little tricks, you know, and tricking people into revealing information to you and opening up to you.
I love gizmos. I love technology. And, you know, there's that TV show Cheaters.
Yeah.
And they've got their own little spy shop where they sell all kinds of cool little devices and stuff. Are they readily available to people if you want little cameras and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Those things are, oh, yeah, you can get a million of those things. And even like little GPS devices, you can stick them in a car and follow your spouse around and stuff like that and track it on your computer.
You really can track it on your own computer that way?
Yeah, they have these. You can rent GPS equipment and you tuck it in your car, and then you can track it around. But you know, with the old iPhones, because remember when there was that big scandal about how people found out that the iPhones were tracking your location?
Yes.
Right. It was like the iPhone 3. Well, back in that time, you know, we knew about this before it hit the news, and we were able to do an iPhone location tracking report that could track every Wi-Fi hotspot that you were at and every cell tower that you were at for up to 2 years.
Wow.
And that was great.
And how reliable is it? Perfect.
Oh, that was perfect. It was a time stamp to it. So if your wife said that she was at the gym, but you saw her at the other end of town, you know she wasn't.
Now, you're in Vegas. You're based in Vegas. So I assume you probably get some great clientele and some great stories there.
Well, most of my stuff, in Vegas, I do the cell phone forensics and the computer forensics. We do our PI stuff, the asset searches and the locates and that kind of stuff. We do that at background reports, background criminal records checks. We do that out of Colorado. But I do have guys in Vegas to do surveillance and follow people around. Things come up. I do a lot of that celebrity stuff, that celebrity work. And a lot of celebrities come here to Vegas and get in trouble.
Now, what do you do? Are you there to protect? You're not a bodyguard, right?
Nope, I don't do any bodyguard work either, although we can get guys for you, you know, if you need that. But I get involved in these stories. You know, like I was involved in the Tiger Woods case. I did all the cell phone forensics for the Tiger Woods mistresses to prove which one was a real mistress and which one wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, I did the cell phone forensics in the Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore case.
Now, who would hire you for that?
Well, the agent for the mistresses hired me to prove who was really a mistress and who wasn't. See, after the first woman came forward, Rachel Yucatel, she came forward, she got this great big giant settlement. So all these women started coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, they all wanted money.
Yeah. I went with him, too. I was his girlfriend, too. I want money. So it became a little cottage business to figure out who was a real mistress and who wasn't, and who gets that job? Me, okay? You know, and I came up with the theory, you know, send me the phones and we'll find some proof on the phone that they had some kind of connection to Woods.
Wow. Do people hire you to find, you know, a lost fortune or anything like that?
Asset searches, of course. Yeah, you do asset searches in divorces, in business litigation. What do you call that? When someone dies and in probate.
Probate,
cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. All that kind of stuff.
So-and-so, I'm getting divorced to them and they've got all this money tucked away. You need to go find it for me. Is that what you do?
And computer forensics will come in handy with that too, because you'll find information on the computer.
On their computer?
Oh, of course. Yeah. See, when people get divorced, sometimes they leave behind a computer or a cell phone or a laptop.
Yeah, that's true. They don't think of that, do they?
They don't take everything with you.
My gosh. What has, beyond that story you just told me, what has been one of the strangest other cases you've worked on?
Okay, I was hoping you wouldn't ask this one either. Okay.
Don't forget now, we're on family radio.
I did edit myself on the last one because he had some comments to make on the gay website. But the thing is, okay, I had one. Okay, we do the email tracing. Now, that's pretty much how I got started with the website, emailrevealer.com, which is where all my businesses are based out of. And what I do is I trace, find a name and address behind an anonymous email address. So this woman comes to me and she says, listen, this guy has an email address. I want to know what his name is and what he looks like. And I said, okay, well, what's your problem with him? You know, what kind of, are you being cyber-stalked? You know, are you some kind of Nigerian scam?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the problem? She says, no problem. I like him. And I says, well, okay, well, if you like him, why don't you ask him?
Just ask him. Yeah, send me a picture, right?
Right. And she says, well, no, you don't understand. He says, he comes over and he comes to see me, but he makes me wear a blindfold.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
That is a 100%. Can I make that up? Could you make that up, George?
I could not make that
okay, up. Okay, this is what happens, man.
And she does it? She puts the blindfold on?
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to tell you before about how the secrets in people's lives, you could walk past that woman in a grocery store, you would not know that she's in some kind of weird relationship with a guy over the internet, and he comes to her home and has sex with her, you know, while she's wearing a blindfold.
And then he leaves.
Yeah, and she wants to hire me to figure out what he looks like.
And then, you know, he probably says you got to count to 50 before you take your blindfold off, and he runs for his car.
How'd you come up with that theory, Josh?
Well, maybe it was me, but no, but I bet that's what they do, don't they?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But I also see people, they fall for these elaborate catfish scams and financial scams
online.
Other
one. So if she comes up to you and says, look, all I got is his email address. I want to know what he looks like. Do you find that?
Oh, yeah. We can. That's one of my specialties. Yeah, that's how I got started in all this stuff with the emails. That's how I invented the stuff with the tracing them back to online dating websites. It started out, emailrevealer.com started out as a cyber stalking prevention website to catch cyber stalkers, to identify people behind anonymous email addresses, get their name, address, and phone number. And that's what launched all this other stuff.
The internet has grown to the point where a lot of people will use little avatars, and they'll hide behind that and do the junk that they do. Can you find those people?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. That's how we started. Identifying those people.
Let's say a lawyer wanted to sue somebody for something on the internet, but they had no idea who the person was, you know, because, you know, he calls himself Wild Bill or something like that.
Right.
You can find that person.
Sure. Because, and it's a whole, it's internet defamation. An internet defamation case or a cyber stalking case. First thing you got to do is you got to find all the evidence of the wrongdoing, and you document all that, and you save it, you store it, you know, in a report, and then you go and you identify the person behind doing it.
How do you find that person?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do to find them. First of all, there's databases where you can just run it through a database and find it. There's ways to wait. Let's say you have a suspect who you think is doing it. A lot of times they know who the person is, okay, who's doing this. They just can't prove it. So you can capture information from the suspect and capture information from the stalker and then do a comparison report. And you can get enough identifiers in this that you can make a report that you can get a murder conviction out of it.
Whoa. When you track an IP address, exactly what is an IP address?
Okay, that's a big problem, okay? And now you're going to get me all upset.
No, don't get upset, Eddie. I don't want you upset.
I know, because when you go online and you look up and you say, okay, how do I trace an email? The first thing they tell you to do is look at the headers, pick up the IP address, and then trace that back to the internet service provider, okay? And you'll find where they have their internet service from. But that's not what people really want. They want the person's name, address, and phone.
That's right. They want to know where that computer is.
Right. So for the app, right. And then once you even get to the house, then you want to find out who's using the computer inside the house.
That's a good point.
Right. So now, for the average person, just to have their IP address and trace it back to the ISP, that's useless. That's no good at all. But for me, I do this for a living all the time. You know, I do have confidential sources that can give me, you know, inside the ISP, so it can, you know, kind of reveal information to me. But also, besides the ISPs, there's other internet sources, like big giant websites, where you can develop sources within these companies that they know, they will recognize that IP address logging into their service to use their service. I don't want to say anything in particular, but let's say, okay, coast to coast. And you guys have millions and millions of...
Zillions.
Yeah, right. So your IT guy, if I give him an IP address, he can trace it back. Well, there's not, yeah, maybe trace it back to a purchase that was made on your site, a subscription that was done on your site. So if I have him as a source, he can give me that information.
That's interesting. But if you don't have that...
Oh, no, if you're just a regular guy who doesn't do this for a living, you're out of luck.
You're not going to get that.
No, unless you can get a subpoena. If there's something, you can go to court and you get a court order, then you can trace that IP address back to a person's name.
And I want you to react to the Edward Snowden NSA scandal for a second. How do you feel about all that?
Well, okay. First of all, I got to wonder, you know, because you would know, because we're both in this kind of conspiracy theory radio business, you know. And
that's right.
Completely different levels. No one's heard of me. Everyone's heard of you.
Well, they'll hear you after this show, believe me.
What's that?
They'll hear of you after this show.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much. I'd like that. So we know there's a lot of whistleblowers out there who have really good information to try and get it public that they can't, you know. So somehow this guy Snowden appears on the national stage. I got to wonder if it's some kind of inside operation, like a controlled opposition.
Really?
Yeah.
I like,
do have to wonder.
Like he was a intentional plant?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's just a theory, you know? And that would be one theory. And obviously, there's massive NSA spying going on the average person.
Right. Does that bother you?
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, of course. I'm a civil rights, civil liberties. I told you I was an anarchist. I've been protesting on the street since I was a kid. You know, I'm definitely for people's civil liberties.
Jerry Rubin would have been hailed as a hero these days.
Yeah, I really wonder. You know, a lot of these kids today, I was in a group of kids the other day. They didn't even know who Jack Ruby was.
Oh, I know. I mean, hey, we have gone through a whole era of people who were not even born when we were on the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, like my producer was around when Abe Lincoln was giving his speeches. So, you know, when you go through all this, and again, most of your clients are relationship type people. Is that pretty accurate?
No, because I have all the cyber stalking stuff too, and the criminal cases. It's pretty much everybody under the sun, to tell you the truth.
What has things like Facebook done to your business? Has it made it even bigger?
Yeah. Well, Facebook, there's a lot of issues with Facebook. I think it's a government operation because Facebook is an incredible database. Because there's a lot of databases that a private investigator, bill collectors, repo agents, that they have access to. And you can, and it comes from credit headers, you know, because people, they fill out credit applications with their phone number, their address.
That's right.
That information at the top of the credit header is for sale. You can buy and sell that. So they have these databases. And one thing you can find is, if you search an address, you can find out all the people who lived at that address at one time or another, common residencies, right? But you really don't know what the relationship between those names are. But with Facebook, they created a database where they know who my ex-girlfriends are. They know who my ex-friends are, people who I was once friends with that I'm no longer friends with. So if I want to investigate George Norrie, I don't want to call up his friends. I want to call up his enemies. So Facebook has created this valuable database. Now, I don't have access to that database, but somebody does.
Somebody does.
Yeah. That's... And it's not for my benefit or your benefit.
These little search companies that are out there, like, you know, find people, do this, do that. Are they any good?
I have one of those. Emailreveal.com, we do that too. We do the basic little but it's the locates that use database searches. But it's raw data. Okay, if you do a search for $20, $10, it's raw data, and you have to know how to work with that. But it's a good start. And if you just buy a little $20 people search, And if it's not what you need, then you have to move up. You need a skip trace. You need a real investigation where I'm mailing stuff to your previous address to get information from the post office, like your forwarding information. I'm calling your neighbors. I'm calling your relatives. I'm calling your last place of employment, doing DMV searches and all that kind of fun stuff.
Truly amazing how you got into this.
Yeah.
Would you be able to do what you're doing if it wasn't for technology?
Yeah, because we were doing this back in the 80s when we didn't have technology. A lot of people, they want to argue with me about how to trace email addresses. But we were tracing people way back when they were at payphones, which were, you can't get more anonymous than a payphone, right? But we had bail jumpers, and we would find people using payphones and beepers and stuff. We would be able to trace them back. You trick them.
You only charge $69 for a dating service investigation?
Yeah, and it only takes, it depends on what how many you have in the queue, but the investigation only takes about 20 minutes. The basic search is $69, and we trace it back to the online dating sites, social networks, all the obscure secret social networks. Everybody knows about Facebook and stuff like that, but there's a bunch of them out there. Now, if George Norrie wants to cheat on his wife, he doesn't take her to the restaurant where he takes his wife to.
I'm not married.
Well, okay, if you want to cheat on your girlfriend.
Well, I may have one or two.
Yeah, you go to a restaurant on the other side of town. And people do this as well. When they want to cheat online, they go to those obscure websites where their friends and their girlfriend isn't on that site.
How come on some of these dating services, the man and the woman, sometimes they put a phony picture up there?
That's fascinating. I don't know why people do that, but they do.
Because eventually you're going to meet someone, and they'll look at you and say, that's not you. Right?
Yeah, and that does happen as well, okay? I get a lot of that as well. As a matter of fact, we're going to build a whole big catfish investigation where we're going to be not just tracing the email back to the dating site, but also to their location and verifying all their online information.
Well, that's pretty smart, I think.
Yeah.
I think dating companies should hire you to weed people out.
It would be a fortune. And because it's like 30% of the people on dating sites are in relationships already, and they're sneaking around.
I mean, aren't these dating sites liable if somebody turns out to be a serial killer or something?
No, they're not. And the way it works is if they did hire an investigator to vet these people out, then they would be more liable than they are if they say, listen, you guys are at your own risk.
That is amazing. Okay, so one of your websites, emailrevealer.com.
Yeah, that's the website where you can go and you can get the digital forensics. You can do the searches. You can trace people's email address, background checks, all that kind of stuff.
What if somebody wanted to find a father they never found or something like that?
I do that all the time. I had one, man. I tell you, I loved it, man. This woman, she had her kids taken away from her like 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And we found these kids, man. And we found, they're all adults now. And we found them right before Mother's Day. And on Mother's Day, they're emailing me and calling me up, thanking me, sending me pictures and stuff.
See, everybody had a great time.
Oh, yeah, stuff like that.
That's when it works.
Yeah.
Eddie, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Final hour to go with Ed Opperman, how to succeed as a private investigator. We're going to take your phone calls. Look, any question you have for him, we'll be back.